This is Michael Cho, artist and illustrator, and you're listening to Mighty Marvel Geeks.
USB microphones and headphones provided by CAD Audio. CAD Audio, expression through innovation.
Forgive the interruption, but I believe this requires your attention.
Meanwhile, at the above-ground underwater suborbital volcano lair...
This is urgent.
We need a response team.
We're already putting together the best men. With all due respect, sir, so am I.
I have a plan.
It's a fake laugh.
It's real!
Mighty Marvel Geeks.
That's what we call ourselves. Sort of like a team.
Team? No. We're a chemical mixture that makes chaos. We're a time bomb.
Well then, son, you've got a condition.
Your show about all things Marvel with Mike, Kylan, and Eric.
What a bunch of losers. I am Groot.
That I did know.
These people may be isolated, unbalanced even, but I believe with the right push, they can do exactly what we need.
Suit up. I'm bringing the party to you.
I have indeed been uploaded, sir. We're online and ready.
And welcome to another issue of Mighty Marvel Geeks. It is the Intrepid Trio, Eric, Kylan, and Mike, and we're joined this week by the illustrious illustrator, and you will know him from Power Man and Iron Fist, Sanford Green. How are you doing tonight, Sanford?
I am doing quite well. How are you guys doing?
Good. Good.
Well, doing good. Doing good.
Yeah, so that word illustrious is being used again. I'll gladly accept it.
There you go.
And it doesn't have to be for art, so.
So, you're currently the artist on Power Man Iron Fist. How did that come about? How did you get pegged to be the artist?
Well, I grabbed a hold of Brian Michael Bendis's little calf, his leg, and I held on tight. And I said, I'm not going to let go. I'm not going to let go until you grant me my wish. Because everyone knows that Brian Michael Bendis, he covets Luke Cage, since the early days of him writing a lot of the Avengers stories. But in all seriousness, yeah, we had a quick conversation in New York about a year and a half ago, and he said he has some things coming up that he would like to talk to me about. And actually, just kind of going a little further back, I had a great conversation with Axel Alonso, who's a good friend of mine. We actually were friends before I did any work at Marvel. Our love for sports and music kind of made a connection with us, and we talked about, you know, doing some things. At the time, it just wasn't the right time to do anything. This is about 5 years ago, to be honest with you now. And he said that, man, you will be great on doing some characters that we want to bring about. And even then, they were talking about bringing about some diversity in the Marvel Universe, not just in the characters, but in the creators. And he expressed a high interest in having me come on board to work there. At the time, you know, it was just a really interesting time because the Marvel movies were just starting to really blossom. And a lot of the photorealistic stuff was more prevalent. And that was just the artistic direction at the time. So a lot of what I do, the aesthetics that I bring forth, there are things that it just wasn't on the radar at the time. I shouldn't say it wasn't on the radar. It was, but it just wasn't the right time. And again, you know, just keeping that relationship with Axel, it just allowed me to do some things over there. I did some one shots and some Spider-Man stuff and so on and so forth, and just kind of kept the door open. Fast forward back to with Bendis, we became acquainted through those few years that I was doing a few short things for Marvel, and he always felt like, you know, I would be, you know, it would be cool to have me over there doing something on a permanent basis. And of course, even then, I expressed my excitement for Mr. Luke Cage, and you know, they thought it was cool. But of course, it was all about timing. Fast forward, last year, they really started to pull everything together, and Axel said, hey, now's the time. It was so funny because I honestly had already kind of thought the ship had passed, had sailed. There were things that they were doing, like with the... they brought me on board to kind of help to cultivate the whole hip hop variant cover initiative and a few other things. And during that time is when we really started talking a lot about the new direction of Marvel and, you know, what would I like to work on. And of course, I mentioned the Luke Cage stuff, and they said exactly, you know, what I wanted to hear. It was like, hey, we're thinking the same thing, man. You think you'll be great on this? It was funny how they even said it, though, because it was almost like they came up with the idea, you know, on their own. I was like, hey, you know what? We were thinking that you would be a good artist on this Luke Cage project. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, sometimes you got to let them, you know, just have their time. So, and again, like with David Walker, how he got involved, we had already known each other, and we were working on the Shaft project over at Dynamite. I was just doing covers. And while we were working on that, he mentioned about how Marvel has been reaching out to him, and he said they're interested in me working on something. And I was like, oh, that'll be cool, man, for us to do something together, not knowing that they had already paired us together. I brought that up to Axel, and he basically said, you know, that's exactly what we were thinking, you know, that you and David would be great together. And that was it really. We just, you know, started to collaborate and work together, and it's been great. It's been incredible just working with him. That dude has so much understanding of the history of not only the Marvel universe, but just the specifics in the Luke and Danny universe. He also is really well versed in just that time, that era, the 70s and the 80s. And, you know, if you even look at his Twitter handle, I mean, his Instagram and all of, you know, it's all like, you know, named after, you know, 70s exploitation, you know, sounding, you know, names. So he brought about a lot of that energy from that time period. He brought a lot of that to the current stories that we're doing now, which I'm having a blast on.
I have to jump in here because I just spent last week in binging issues 1-3. And I think I was driving my wife nuts because I'm reading this, and it had, okay, number one, I love the look of the book, and I love what you did with the look of Luke and Danny. That's a, you know, the thing is that so you were talking about that photorealistic aesthetic that we had seen for so long, where, you know, you kind of see him, he seems to be more like a bodybuilder, had that bodybuilder physique, but
right,
you almost made him, it was almost reminiscent almost of the look that they gave him when he was with the Thunderbolts. They drew him bigger, you know, he almost seemed like more like a power lifter as opposed to a bodybuilder, you know, that
right,
there's a difference there.
Right.
And so I was liking that part of it. And I told my wife, I said, it's like the book has that feel from, it feels like a real continuation from that 70s series, because it kind of has that feel, but it has that mix of that Lethal Weapon type of humor, because there are all these little, like Luke would say something and then you get a little flashback to what he's talking about.
Right.
And I would just die laughing, especially the whole fiddle faddle thing. It was phenomenal. I'm loving it.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry.
I got to jump in with a question. Just whose idea was it to put Luke Cage in a suit?
To put him in an actual suit. That was my idea.
I love the idea because I took a look at the cover of issue number 2.
Right.
And he's just, it's walking down the street. He's almost like he's going to some kind of board meeting.
Right.
Except for the fact that he's got a bozo slung under his shoulder, and it's just kind of like, it's just, I love it. That's a great idea.
I was like you, because I mean, for years you saw him either in the disco shirt and pants, or in t-shirt, leather jacket and pants, or that sort of thing. And then, you know, when I see the I see the suit pants and shirt with the vest. And I'm like, okay, that's a look that I haven't seen, but yeah. It fits. And apparently, the people at Marvel love it because they picked it up as an alternate uniform you can get on the Marvel Future Fight app.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, okay.
It kind of reminds me of the Gray Hulk when he was like, you know, Joe Fix It over in Vegas.
Yes.
I would just love to see some team up story between the two of them where they're just going around in these suits and ties, and it's kind of like almost like, you know, the Blues Brothers.
Be careful what you wish for, man.
Careful. I'm wishing for that.
Yeah, but, you know, see, based on Jessica's reaction to what happened to the shirt that she gave him, right. I don't think that she would let him out of that house knowing that he's bringing back the band that he swears he's not bringing back. She's not going to let him out of the house with anything nicer than the t-shirt that she let him leave the house with, which I'm loving that bit of reality, by the way.
Yeah, it's so much fun. Just, you know, even as I'm drawing this, I'm in here at the drafting table, just laughing to myself, sometimes out loud. My wife is like, "What are you laughing at?" I'm like, "Nothing, honey. It's just Luke and Danny again. They're doing what they do." And I think one of you guys mentioned about the whole Lethal Weapon, you know, Danny Glover and Mel Gibson, you know, their relationship. That's exactly what we were going for with this story, this new line of stories, because you know we honestly looked at what characters like Daredevil and I'm trying to think, there was something else. There's another character that had a trans. Well, Daredevil specifically, Hawkeye. That was the other one. We looked at just where they were and how they got their kind of revamping, and their stories and their characters were like a total 180. You know, you had this Mark Waid Somni run that really had a lighter, more swashbuckling, mm-hmm. you know, just fun, whimsical stories. And we were like, hey, you know, let's try this. This is a little, I think this is just the time. I mean, with what Marvel and DC, I'm sorry, I know this is a Marvel panel, but, yeah. You know, with what DC's been trying to do story-wise and what we've been kind of hearing in the ether about how dark everything has been in their stories, you can feel that Marvel was definitely trying to shy away from being that overall. I mean, if you look at their stories over at, you know, let alone, let's not even use Deadpool or Spider-Man, you know, just how fun those books are and those characters are. But now you have other, you know, just lighter characters out there. You know, of course, Daredevil, you know, new stories. And then you got Squirrel Girl. I mean, think about that. Squirrel Girl has a monthly at Marvel and
yes,
a top selling book. You know, then you have like Patsy Walker, Hellcat, how lighthearted that is. Then you have Devil Dinosaur and Moon Girl. I mean, you think about those. These are, they're all ages for the most part, but the industry has been screaming for this for a long time in terms of more fun stories, more all ages stories. And I'm not saying that, you know, us, you know, grown men would, you know, necessarily fall into that category. I mean, we may want some of that, but we also want the action and the, you know, the bravado in there, but we don't want death every issue. You know, I'm quite certain of that. I mean, last time I checked, I was a full grown man, and I don't like to read about someone dying in some book every issue or some, you know. Lord knows, Daredevil, he went through it for the last 10 years prior. And, it, you know, those stories were good for his time. Hence the really cool Netflix shows. But even with those, you know, you look at, like, the movies and how lively those movies are, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. So we just wanted to do something that really was in the vein of that.
Speaking of the Netflix shows, how much influence in future episodes will come from the Luke Cage and the Iron Fist shows?
Right now, honestly, we don't know. I'm probably, you know, not really knowing all the ins and outs just yet, but I would take an educated guess that probably some things will come from this, you know, what's happening now, you know, just because it's out now, you know. But I would imagine that they will pull a lot more from the past. It'll be a combination of things, I would believe.
Now, will it go the reverse way? Will y'all pull a little bit from the TV shows? Maybe for like looks or aesthetics?
You know, it's interesting. When the Jessica Jones show came out, we were working on this, and everyone was like, man, you got to watch Jessica Jones. You'll get some ideas. And my whole thing was, that's why I can't watch it, because I don't want to be influenced. I really wanted this to be its own thing, you know, and we've been succeeding in that thus far. So, that doesn't mean I'm not going to watch it or anything like that. I just want it to be its own thing. And if the powers that be, I mean, there's no real plans for us to go into that and pull from that. But if the powers that be come along and say, hey, you know, we need this in there or whatever, for, you know, to bring some continuity in or some cohesiveness in both mediums, then we'll do that, you know, but not much issue. Not unless we got something really, really cool in the books that, you know, it's like, man, we can't do it. We gotta do it. So, and so far they've been great in letting us, do our thing.
Okay. And I just have to know, somewhere in the very, very back of Luke's closet, is there a steel tiara and yellow disco shirt? Jessica, you know, kind of dinged him, like, you know, she said, okay, I don't need to see you running around the tiara again. Am I going to see that? And I'm just like, you know what? I'm wondering, is there somewhere, because even Danny, when he's talking, he's going back to that, right? You know?
Well, you know, the Easter eggs that I threw in on these issues, man, I tell you what, I have to get a separate notepad just to write down the ideas that we have as far as like bringing back hints or doing these subtle things. I mean, in issue 3, I pay homage to some other outside things, outside of the world of Luke and Danny, you know, and a lot of people caught it. I got emails like from tons of people saying, is that the, oh, I just saw this thing, you know, just little shots of different things.
Oh, okay. So I got to go back and look again.
Look in issue 3.
Okay.
So the tiara will be like in a drawer or something, just kind of like barely in shot. And
yeah. Well, not that, but there are other things. There are other things. I'll say that. There's no spoiler or anything like that, but I just leave it to you so you can find it yourself.
See, I'm like, okay, because I think I spent so much time just. It just seemed like I'm pulled into the story, it's almost like a big, okay, it's like a big con. I guess is what you want to call it. But yeah. Then, I do have a question. I know that when they met, what's the guy's name? Senor Magico, I believe that was his name.
Oh, yeah.
Was that Luis Guzman?
That could very well be him.
Okay, because I'm looking, I'm like, I know who this guy looks like. I said, maybe I'm just kind of trying to throw that in there.
Yeah.
For my own, but because as he's talking, and the way you drew him, that's who I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be correct.
Okay.
Yeah, right. David and I, we were discussing who could this guy be. And a lot of times he would give me someone, he said, he looks like this and he acts like this. And he'll send me these images. And sometimes I'll go with the exact thing that he sent me, or I may improvise. But that one, I just couldn't pass up, man. I look at his hair and I was like, man, this guy would be awesome. I can totally see him in the Luke Cage TV show, dressed up, you know, with a cape on. I totally see him in the Luke Cage show. So, to some degree, I'm trying to in a subconscious kind of way, or not even an ambiguous kind of way, imply some things that would be cool to see if it could happen, you know, in like a Netflix show or somewhere else, you know.
It's like Harlem, he's Harlem's answer to Doctor Strange, apparently. So
yeah,
because Doctor Strange, no, he's saying that street magic, you know, isn't a thing, and then this guy's like, well, we know what he called Doctor Strange. He's like, yeah. You know, street magic is a real thing. He don't know what he's talking about. And I'm just like, oh my God.
I'm gonna put this out there because we do have the habit, you know, like the reference or the Lethal Weapon reference Eric mentioned earlier. We do have a history. If we put something out there, it ends up happening, whether we have a guest or not. So I'm gonna question the image that you have on your Facebook page that you guys have coming up. Okay. Is there a Last Dragon vibe to this?
Oh! That laugh says it all.
And should I be listening to El DeBarge when I see this image in the future?
Right. Well, I'll put it this way. The thing that you might have seen on Facebook, that was in issue 3. So for those who hadn't read issue 3 yet, that's where that image is coming from. But I don't want to go too far, but basically Marvel is allowing us to take those types of things, and we're basically creating the universe, the Marvel universe. I hear you laughing. The Marvel universe is vast. The galactic portion of the Marvel universe is even faster. So in the magical universe is right along with it. So yeah. So there you go, man. So we're introducing some new things that the Marvel universe has not seen. We're tapping into some other portions of that magical universe, that galactical space opera soul, you know, funk.
You have this. I got your soundtrack. I checked out your soundtrack for Power Man and Iron Fist.
Oh wow, yeah. I didn't realize they were gonna do like the unedited version. So I got like kids coming up to me saying, "Yeah, I was like, wow, okay." Well, you know, if your parents let you listen to it, then you're. I was like, I thought it was gonna be on the Marvel. You know, they're very, it's very family oriented. So, but I just went with what I normally listen to, you know. But I digress. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No.
For those who haven't seen, what is your soundtrack while working on Power Man and Iron Fist?
Oh shucks, a lot of hip hop tracks that I gave Marvel were all hip hop driven. But truth be told, I listened to a little bit of everything. I just thought that it would be cool to kind of shed some light on some artists and music that probably a lot of people have heard of, but not necessarily on this scale or in this genre. Yeah, truth be told, you know, the hip hop variant thing, you know, that was cool, and it definitely shed some light on a culture that honestly marries really well with comic book culture in terms of like the influences and things of that nature. There are things in the hip hop culture that totally derived from comic book culture. If you listen to Run DMC's, you know, early music, a lot of the things they said was very derivative from stuff they read in the comic book. You know, they were huge fans of the Fantastic Four, and the Thing was really one of the big characters, the Hulk, Thor, Captain America. These characters said things in the comics that they used in their lyrics. Same thing with LL Cool J and so on and so forth. So it was really cool just to be a part of something that really gave attention to those things. I knew about it for forever, but a lot of people, that was a foreign, you know, a foreign concept to them. You know, especially people that were, you know, just really into the comic book culture. Mm-hmm. So it was just kind of really neat to shed some light on, you know, that side of things. So long story, as far as like my music, you know, it's definitely the hip hop aspect of it, but you know, I can honestly sit and listen to talk radio all day too. You know, I'm really into the whole, you know, I don't know, whatever it is, something. I listen to a lot of classical music, to be honest with you. I just didn't feel like it was the soundtrack for Luke and Danny, though. I listen to a lot of different things, but if you want the soundtrack for Luke and Danny, that's what I you know, gave Marvel to Popes. So, you know, your typical LLJ, Mama Said Knock You Out, that just sounds like a, you know.
Yeah.
That ought to be his theme song, just right in and of itself. Yes.
Yeah, that's the Luke man with that suit on, walking down the street.
Yes.
Mama said, knock you out. And that's where he's a hero for hire. You know, and he also knocks people out because Mama said so.
Go ahead.
Would The Last Dragon be a guilty pleasure for Luke Cage and Danny Rand?
That would definitely be for Danny Rand. That's for sure.
Heck yeah.
Show enough.
See, okay, now I like.
You guys are giving me some great ideas for some future issues, man.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Well, I like what you've done with Danny's wearing now. That kind of that jumpsuit almost actually it just hit me why that looks so familiar to me. So that jumpsuit kind of is sort of similar to the yellow suit that Bruce Lee wears in Game of Death. Yeah. So I'm like, well, how likely is it? Because now I'm gonna start looking for like Last Dragon references. I love The Last Dragon, and when this is like what the 30th anniversary for it or something. This is 30 year anniversary.
Probably.
Yeah, it's getting there.
All right, great. So now I'm gonna have to pull out the soundtrack and see what. See what kind of headspace that puts me in as I read.
Actually, 31st year. It hit 30 years last year, yeah. March 22nd.
Wow. So that means that movie came out after Purple Rain.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so like 86, 87, something like that?
85. March 22nd, 85.
Wow, just a year after Purple Rain.
Yeah.
Man, such a great time back then. Good grief, man.
It was.
A lot of great stuff.
So you're now along with just drawing him the physical appearance. Did you decided you wanted to keep him bald, but instead of the goatee, you decided to go with the full beard on him. This just sort of like another way to kind of, I guess, sort of put him in a different place now? You know, even though he kind of makes a reference where he can go back to the Avengers if he wants to, but it almost feels like that he's kind of ready to kind of go and do his own thing and almost go back home to a certain degree. Is that what, you know, is that what's going on with him? Or
yeah, I mean, everything you said is correct. And I mean, really, it's about a story of just where they are in life. Danny, you know, is trying to hold on to the past. Luke is ready to move on. You know, totally different lifestyles and outlooks on life. You know, Luke is, you know, married with a child. It's like, man, this is, I don't know if you guys, of course you've seen it, The Incredibles. When, you know, just that whole interaction with Frozone. I think is it Frozone? No, it's Mr. Incredible. Just how they're trying to, in a sense, Luke knows that, you know, he's got to be a responsible man, but that the little fraternity bromance, you know, kind of influences or just keeps coming back up. And that's as older men, you guys can totally, you know, get out there on the basketball court and you still think, I might have just one good, you know, jump shot left in me. Yeah, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to try to make this thing happen because you have it in you. We all have that in us. And that's what Luke is. Luke is one of those, you know, hey, I've been there. I'm moving on. But at the same time, in a weird kind of way, if he really did not want to do this, he wouldn't have Danny around. Danny is around, one, because that's his best friend. But two, Danny, he in a sense, he wants Danny to kind of, you know, coach him up into going out there and make this stuff happen. You know, we always had that one friend that's not good for us, but we love them because they live on the edge and we just kind of, we like that. Deep down, we like that. It's the thrill. It's the thrill ride.
Go ahead.
No, you're good, man. You're good.
Well, it's like the characters have changed because it seemed like at the beginning, up until, I don't know, maybe the late 80s, early 90s, you still had the Murtaugh Riggs thing going on, except Danny was Murtaugh. He was the more logical, sensible one, and Luke was Riggs. Luke was ready. He was always ready for a fight. And then, you know, he's married now, and now it's flipped. And it's interesting that it's flipped like that. And it's still a fun book. It's a lighthearted book to a certain degree, but there's a lot of truth to it at the same time without slapping you in the face with it. You know, the art goes such a long way into kind of portraying that story also, you know.
Yeah. And you know, that was the other thing too. There's been a lot of interest in how we are approaching this. We've been fortunate, you know, I guess you have a few naysayers out there, but not like how I thought it would be. Cause I thought, man, people are going to hate what I'm doing with this thing because of it's not this house style traditional. I believe in characterization, like making the characters have their own narrative. When you see Luke, I want it to be obvious that he is the big man. I mean, not taking anything away from, and I think it's something to be said about, you know, the way that the reason why I made him the size is because of how the story was going. He's a serious one. He's the laid back one. He's mm-hmm. the lovable one. He, you know, he's got a daughter that pretty much got him wrapped around his finger, him and his wife, of her and the wife. And you look at that and that aesthetic with her, you know, pointing the finger at him, you know, with Jessica Jones pointing at him, and he's got his head down because he's ashamed because he keeps, you know, running around with Danny. It's hysterical, to be honest with you. And it kind of drives home a lot of the points of just what we're trying to do in the narrative of these characters. Had I made him in, you know, similar shape and form as Danny, it wouldn't drive it as much as it wouldn't drive it as much. So, you know, a skinny character, I want them to be skinny. A big character, I want them to be big, and I want them to have different silhouettes. And the silhouette is so important. I mean, it's huge in animation. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't, you know, I can't stand when I see a character like Daredevil, he's the exact same size as Thor or Captain America. I mean, it's like, why are you doing that? That makes no sense to me. I think Thor and, you know, Thor and Luke are comparable, you know, mm-hmm. but that's really it. You know, like you shouldn't have, you know, characters like Daredevil or whatever, you know, the same form, the same shape. So
no.
But yeah, I don't know if I answered your question there, but you know, basically overall, I just think that the narrative is so important, and the characters are the first line of narrative, because you see the characters, you're already seeing a story before you even read one word. You see these characters, you already know he's the serious one. He's trying to go the straight and narrow. He's the Danny Glover of the group. Mm-hmm. You know, you see Danny and you see he's all smiles and he's just, you know, kind of in some ways, you know, I don't want to use the word silly, but I think he is a lot more lighter than he was before. In a sense, the roles have reversed.
Yeah.
From the old stories.
Very much an Abbott and Costello Abbott and Costello feel to it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it was like I noticed how, like, the way you draw Black Mariah, that's her name. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, like, some people would say that it was almost cartoonish, but the thing is, if you walked out, if you spent half a day just walking out, people watching, you're going to see somebody who looks like that. I guess to me, what you've done is, it harkens back to comic art in the sense, it's not photorealism. It's more to me why I consider comic art.
It's more expressionist.
Yeah. And so you have that, but at the same time, it still captures what we see in day-to-day life. Right. Maybe a little bit, maybe 0.3 on the scale of, you know, maybe just a little bit bigger than what you would see, but it's not so big that you can't fathom that. But I do like that you give more perspective to that Luke should be, you know, that his bearing gives you the what his character is, right. And he shouldn't be the same size as Danny.
Right.
And it's and even though like Danny is now, he's a little bit more lighthearted and he's way more talkative.
Oh yeah,
but it makes sense, mm-hmm. You know. And I love how everybody when the two of them are out now, everybody's got their phones out and they're taking pictures and they're like, are they? You can almost see the people in the background whispering, like, are they back together? Somebody on Twitter or Tweeter, as Dr. Strange is said, that No Heroes for Hire is back in business, and I'm like, the two guys just went out to eat and all of a sudden it's a thing,
right? Yeah, we you know, and I guess I can let you in on this. We were trying to do this whole, and I thought it honestly it might have been too much looking back on it. We were trying to get this, like, these little Twitter inserts throughout panels showing people tweeting about them.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, honestly, that can be something on its own. And you kind of get the picture anyway. You just said it because we, you know, that I felt like it would have been a little too much for what it is. I think it's kind of cool to have the reader kind of infer a lot of that is already happening. In a sense, it has been happening. And we got a few other things that we're going to be doing that's going to be a lot of fun as far as like people, you know, bringing up the news and how the news travels. Because even in issue two, the first few pages, you see a lot of the criminals on the, you know, or former or reformed criminals or whatever, you know, they're all talking about it. And they're talking about, they're spreading the word. Like, dude, you heard, man? Like, those dudes are back together. Oh, man, this is not good. You know?
It'll be something that you would see in like a 70s blaxploitation movie. Like, you see this weird montage of, you know, these two talking, and then these two are talking, and this one's talking, and this one's talking, and
right,
you know, all of a sudden it starts at,
and then they told someone mm-hmm. and so on.
I was hoping that this week would be issue four, because I know issue three dropped like 2 weeks ago, but I kept thinking, you know, maybe, you know, Marvel.com is off because they didn't tell me when 3 was going to come out. So I'm like, okay, maybe they're off. But no, that wasn't the case. I'm just sitting here waiting for 4. You know? So,
well, I definitely appreciate the enthusiasm, man.
Before we go too far past the subject of style, artistic style, who has been your inspiration? We talked about your inspiration for when you're listening while drawing. Who are some of the artists that have influenced you over the years? Because I'm seeing a lot of what I first kind of like. It's almost got an Al Milgram feel to it.
Okay,
very very expressive, very angular, and I just think it's great.
Oh, thank you. Well, I love a lot of the old cartoonists. I think that's where I'm at now. Michael Golden probably is my greatest influence. You know, that dude, you know, he just doesn't get enough credit, in my opinion. I mean, you hear his name a lot, but still, I think he deserves some type of, I don't know, Vanguard Award or something. I don't know. But he's influenced so many guys that are really, really luminaries in the field. And, you know, I'm not saying that I'm one of those guys, but definitely there are tons more artists that have been influenced by him. You know, the people that I guess come from his tree, if you will. I've loved his work since the Avengers Annual number 10. I think that was the first thing I ever saw of his. This is way before the Doctor Strange stuff and
exposed to Michael with his Star Wars stuff. When he did Star Wars for Marvel.
Yeah. And you know, that's crazy because I never knew he did a lot lot of Star Wars stuff until recently, and I'm like, now I'm digging, trying to find that stuff. Oh my goodness, man. I got this Marvel Fanfare stuff that he did that I just go through that stuff every once in a while. Of course, G.I. Joe, the NAM, all that stuff, man. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Got it. Mm-hmm. Oh, the NAM. Oh.
Yeah.
I remember the NAM. Yeah, I remember that.
The NAM is was one of those things where, honestly, I need to pull that out tonight because I'm working on something. I think I could use some kick in my step here. So yeah. But
is that a spoiler alert that I'm hearing? I'm thinking
not necessarily. I can tell you what it is. It's a Black Panther cover that I'm working on right now.
Ah, neat.
Oh.
Yeah. So I'm doing those things. I'm doing that as well. Some variant covers for that. So
keeping out for that then.
Yeah. So Michael honestly is the top of the food chain, man, for me. And then, you know, there are other guys like, I'm really, you know, trying to go back at, like I said, the old strip artists now. They're huge in my reference file now, artistic reference file, like, Alex Raymond, Milton Kniff, let's see. Al Williamson. That's a dude that's, you know, speaking of Star Wars, man, his Star Wars stuff. Oh my gosh, man. I think they're coming out with an artist edition of that soon. IDW is doing an artist edition of that. And
Of the old strips?
Yeah, of the old. Actually, it's from the old, from the Dark Horse stuff that Al Williams did. Yeah, so which is, there's still, oh my gosh, I got a few of the trades, and I'm like, you know what, I'll get the artist edition as well, because that's a whole nother format.
Yeah.
To see these things life size, you know, beautifully reproduced, you know, just awesome, an awesome collection of stories. So I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, those are pretty much the guys that I'm really checking out now, you know. And one other guy too, Jim Holdaway, he did that Modesty Blaze series. I don't know if you guys heard of that. It was an old strip.
I remember it, and I never. It was one of the things, like, I've heard of it because I'm kind of into the old pulp stuff.
Right.
And so, but and there was a movie of that character, but right. I've never found any of the strips anywhere, but I am familiar with the character.
Well, they were collected by Flesk.
Okay.
Well, no, I'm sorry, not Flesk. Flesk, it was a Titan Books. They did a collection of these. I think they did all of the entire collection.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, so I'm pretty sure you can jump on like Amazon or something like that, and you can find those. But yeah, his work on that series, Jim Holdaway, I really kind of, I don't know, I think the light came on for me from a standpoint of how you use the tools in terms of the pen and ink and still bring about like character, because he did a lot of, and when I say character, like he's a lot like Milton Kniff, where I think Milton Kniff, he pushed the cartoonist side of things a lot more. He could go with some more photo, you know, illustrative approaches, but he pushed more from the side of the cartoonist side. And that's something that was really cool about Jim Holdaway, because he can go from the cartoonist side to the illustrator side, you know, with how he works. And that's something that I'm trying to implement more in my work right now.
Okay.
Very cool.
Now, we generally tend to close out our shows with our picks of the week and our Marvel Unlimited pick. Is there a Marvel book or Marvel series from the past that you read that was a big influence to you growing up, or something that you like to go back to? Is that guilty pleasure?
Well, I wouldn't say it's guilty pleasure, because I think it's, for me anyway, it's something that I gladly share and I post this stuff every once in a while. I think one of the biggest things, honestly, I mean, for what it is Secret Wars. When first Secret Wars came out, the first edition with Mike Zeck and Jim Shooter writing it and stuff. I mean, the story was horrible. But, well, I shouldn't say it was horrible. It just was different. It wasn't, you know, it lacked a lot of, looking back at it, it's like The Last Dragon. Okay. You thought it was awesome thing when you saw it as a kid, but mm-hmm. now you take it for what it is. But
yeah,
but you still gladly talk about it because there is so much more great things about it than not. And right. that's kind of what, you know, what it was. It's campy. We get it. So you get past that, then you can enjoy it. And that's mm-hmm. what Secret Wars was for me. So I always go back to that.
Okay. Now, is there anything from Marvel currently that's like a must read for you that you have to go out and pick up?
Well, honestly, I don't read a lot of the series per se, but I read a lot of, it's interesting. I go get a lot of the titles that friends, colleagues work on. I support them. I definitely got the collected edition anyway of the Secret Wars too. So full circle, you know, I grew up with Secret Wars and my good friend, Jonathan Hickman, he, you know, wrote the new Secret Wars, and I supported that, and I followed that from the beginning. So that was pretty exciting to see, you know, just where he's been in his career, where he's come from in his career, and that was very enjoyable.
Okay. Well, would you stick around and give us your take on our picks of the week and our Marvel Unlimited pick?
Sure.
So I think, Eric, you got the Marvel Unlimited pick for this week.
I do, and I actually changed it during the middle of the interview here today because I was kind of on one character, but with all this Luke Cage stuff, I knew there was only one choice that I had to make. And this week's pick is Hero for Hire number 1 from 1972. And this is, of course, where we first see one Mr. Luke Cage. And yes, it's also inspired by the t-shirt that Kylan is wearing because it has the cover on it. It's his origin story. At Seagate Prison, Lucas is a prisoner who's been abused by those who warden over him. I'm reading from the Marvel Wiki here. However, when he explains to prison physician Noah Bernstein that while he wasn't the most law-abiding citizen, he was framed for cocaine possession by his friend Willis Stryker, who then moved in on their criminal racket, and his girl. Bernstein offers Lucas an early chance at parole if he helps with a scientific experiment. But, and there's always a but, racist prison guard tampers with the machine. It actually winds up giving him enhanced strength and bulletproof skin. Once realizing this, Lucas uses his powers to escape Seagate, leaving the staff there to assume that he died trying to flee in the water. Lucas eventually finds his way to New York City, where he decides to put his powers to use, earning himself some income as a quote-unquote hero for hire. Buying a costume and taking on the name Luke Cage, Lucas begins his career as hero for hire. His activities make him popular among the people of Harlem, but also bring the attention of the local syndicate's leader, Diamondback, a costume criminal with trick switchblades, who, as it turns out, is Luke's old friend Stryker. So that is the Marvel Unlimited pick of the week.
Awesome. Well, that just leaves one thing, and that's a guest-filled picks of the week, which I have totally misplaced my drop for that. here we go. And in honor of Luke Cage and Power Man and Iron, well, Power Man and Iron Fist, our picks of the week.
There you go. Comic shop. Everybody going to the comic shop.
And of course, that's the comic. Where do you get the new comic book day picks of the week? At the comic book shop. And that's, of course, the comic book shop by the Shazbots. So, you know what? I think I'm going to start this one.
Cool. Why don't you start this one?
It's been a while since I started. So my first pick of the week is, I was shocked to see this because New Comic Book Day is May 4th. And that's also Star Wars Day. And Marvel's doing a lot of True Believers issues on that day that are Star Wars themed. And I went with True Believers Droids number one. And this is a reprinting of Droids number one, the original Star Comics, which was a Marvel offshoot. And just briefly, title of the story is called The Destroyer. R2-D2 and C-3PO are sent by the Intergalactic Droid Agency to the planet Dodds to serve their new master, Lot Kemp. And then it's just the continued adventures from there, just like we saw in the cartoon. So I just went back to the 80s with that one in that childhood. And it's like, okay. And feel free to chime in at any time, Sanford.
Okay.
And go, you're nuts, or that's, you know, however you feel.
Vanguard Radio, this is DJ John Doe, and to the left of me is my...
Sorry, that's not for this episode. That's not for this show. That's another show.
So, Kylan, why don't you go next?
Okay, my first pick is Black Widow, number three. The writer is Mark Waid. The penciler is Chris Samnee. And cover artist is Chris Samnee. Red Room by Morning, spies take warning. The Weeping Lion has Black Widow under his thumb. Until Natasha learns his true motivations, she's trapped playing his personal weapon and spy. He's controlling the best in the world and sending her to the place she never wanted to go. Okay. I will tell you, this series is like an adrenaline rush. It's really good from the first panel to I can't wait to see where this story is already is going to go. So this is honestly on my pull list. So
yeah, that's actually one of the books that I haven't gotten around to reading the issues yet, but I'm excited for it. I'll be picking that up soon.
Oh, yeah. I've noticed Black Widow is one of those that's consistently picked each month on the show, whether it's me or, you know, between the three of us. I think mm-hmm. we've all picked it at one time.
Yes. I think so, yeah.
So, Eric, your first pick.
Okay, I am following in with the May the 4th be with you kind of feel going here. My first pick of the week is the very first Star Wars comic of all. This is True Believers Star Wars Classic number one. Now, this is a reprinting of, again, the very first Star Wars comic. It actually predates the release of A New Hope by a month.
Yeah.
So this was originally released on April 12th, 1977. And it's the retelling of the story, and it goes through it to the point where the sand people attack Luke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's kind of loosely based on the original script, too, before the final film was...
Yeah, there are some bits in there that obviously were part of the early script that never made it through. Because for one thing, you see what Jabba looked like to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he looked kind of like a walking walrus, for lack of a better. He just kind of had a walrus look to, kind of like the guy from the Woody Woodpecker commercials, only a little scummier.
Mm, yeah.
Well, my number two pick, and I fell in love with it so much with the first issue. I even picked up the action figure variant. It's Gwynpool. This is issue zero. Writer is Christopher Hastings. Penciler is Danilo Bayruth. I'm sure I butchered the first name. Who is Gwynpool and where does she come from? Ever since she made a splash in her first cover appearance, those have been the questions on everyone's lips as they lounge about sipping a tropical beverage. Okay, my beverage wasn't that tropical, but now get all three of the original Gwynpool backup stories from Howard the Duck 1-3 featuring Miss Pool's first appearance and her battle alongside our favorite Private Duck in one convenient package. Plus see Gwen's first Christmas in the Marvel Universe and the guy she killed to mark the occasion. And that's what drew me to, I'm like, number zero, they already released it. And then when I saw, they're bringing in the collection of the backstories. This is if you picked up the first book, first issue, you've got to pick up this one as well. It's you know, obviously go back and get Howard the Duck 1-3 to get the original release of them. But if you want the collected volume, this is the way to do it. So Gwenpool number 0.
All right, cool. Well, my number 2 is a number 2. It's a Black Panther number 2. The writer is Ta-Nehisi Coates, and the penciler and cover artist is Brian Stelfreeze. The darkest chapter of the Black Panther mythos continues as Wakanda crumbles from within. Enter the Midnight Angels, two mysterious women leading the citizen revolt against the current regime of Wakanda, challenging not only T'Challa's politics, but also his resolve. But will their rage provide more for the people than the royal family has thus far? Written by MacArthur genius and National Book Award winner Ta-Nehisi Coates, Between the World and Me, was his book, and illustrated by living legend Brian Stelfreeze.
Now, Sanford, I know you did a variant cover for the first one. Did you do one of the variant covers for issue 2?
Well, yeah, that's, I don't know if you guys are reading that through previews or what have you, as far as the actual promotional ads and stuff like that. But yeah, in there, in previews, it has me down for the connecting variant edition, which is, it goes through issue 4. So
okay.
I'll be doing 1-4 connecting variants. So
awesome.
You can look for that.
We're getting our previews from Marvel.com. That way we have the direct source instead of someone else's interpretation.
Okay.
So, cool. Yeah. So,
I don't know if it's there or not, but I'm pretty sure it does. I don't know.
Okay. So, definitely, if you want the connecting covers, I mean, there were several variant covers, but definitely go pick up the connecting covers for 1-4, done by our guest, Sanford Green.
Right. And Stelfreeze, he's definitely, it's been such a joy. I think, and I totally missed that. That's the one book, even though it's only 2 issues out while coming out. That is the one book that I look forward to the minute I heard the news that he was going to be on it. Because Brian has been such a mentor to me and many other artists. I think, you know, in terms of, you know, you're correct when he said the living legend. Here's one artist that probably can do, I can say with certainty, he can do any genre in any medium. You know, and he just, I think because of that, he does what he wants to do. And that is so awesome and frustrating all at the same time. Because you want to see him on as many things as possible, but because he is such a maverick in how he handles his work, which I think makes him even more awesome, is, you know, he just decides that I'm going to do this instead of this. It would be so easy for him to be, you know, top artists in the mainstream world, in the mainstream aspect of this medium, but he chooses to go a different route, and I just think that's just commendable that he does that. But that being said, it's so cool that he's on a monthly. You know, the selfish me wants him on a monthly. I want to see his work every month. So
yes.
Yeah. So Eric, your number 2 pick.
My number 2 is another number 1. You had Gwenpool. I have Deadpool. Deadpool number 1. Some months ago, we were proud to bring you Deadpool 3.1, a tale told all in Spanish, revealing Massacre, the Deadpool of Mexico. Due to popular demand, because apparently you were too lazy to translate it for yourself, Marvel has taken to an unspecified internet translation site and is representing the comic in poorly translated English. Wow. Just in time for the 5th of May. I saw this write-up and I said, I gotta choose this.
I know, just because.
Wait, hold on. So did we somehow miss the all Spanish? No, that was supposed to be Mercs for Money. Never mind.
Mercs for Money, yeah.
Never mind. Yeah. Okay.
So, well, my final pick of the week, and I guess it would be my final pick for the month of April as well, kind of ties in with Gwenpool number 0. And just so Sanford can understand the craziness of the show as well, my final pick is it's Wow. Howard the Duck, number 7.
Wow. Savagely lives to play that.
It is etched in my mind for the rest of the night. Going into tomorrow.
Every week, he will find a way to bring this song into the show.
Wait, who, me?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry, is there someone else on this show that runs the board?
that would mean he is the all-powerful here.
He is. So,
except he's got two eyes.
Well, I haven't worked the other one in yet. Maybe before the end of the show.
Oh.
But so I went with Howard the Duck, number 7. It's written by Chip Zdarsky. Penciler is Kevin McGuire. When a case takes Howard and Tara to the Savage Land, they all need help. They need all the help they can get. But instead, they make do with Spider-Man, She-Hulk, Daredevil, and Steve Rogers. Join Chip and special guest artist Kevin McGuire for an issue we like to call Howard the Duck, Volume 6, Issue 7.
Volume 6.
Issue 7.
6, you know, 7 does come after 6, so.
Yeah.
Well, I just can't believe there's been 6 volumes of Howard the Duck. I know this one technically would be issue 12, because they hit 5 issues before Secret War, before the most recent Secret Wars started.
Right.
And then it got relaunched, so.
Man.
So, yeah.
I think it's just telling my age that there's been 6 volumes. I'm thinking, Howard was introduced back in, what, the 70s?
76, 77, something like that.
Yeah, okay. So, 6 volumes of this character.
Yeah. So, Kylan, your third pick of the month.
My third pick and last pick of the month, to borrow from Mike, is Captain America, Sam Wilson, number 9. The writer is Nick Spencer, and the penciler and cover artist, Angel Unzueta. I hope I got that right. Standoff epilogue.
Sounds right.
Thank you. With Steve Rogers back as Cap, Sam struggles to find his place. Can the country handle 2 Captain Americas? Now, I have to say something about this. I don't think it's going to be a spoiler, but I just finished reading number 8, and I don't know where they got this from based on how things ended in issue 8, but whatever.
Well, they're
it's
leading
magic.
Well, they're leading up to the new Captain America book that debuts at Free Comic Book Day next weekend.
Right. But Steve says in issue 8, he goes, "You're Captain America. This is your shield. Thank you for letting me borrow it." That's what he said. He's getting his own shield.
Yeah.
It splits apart and it has laser swords in them.
See, that's a cool shield.
Yeah.
I want a shield.
See, that's why he's saying, "You can have this shield. I got me a new one."
He was like, you got it, man. You're good. Here you go.
You good.
Yeah. Here. Take it to Antiques Roadshow. See what you get off of it. You know? Right.
And then look, wait, why is yours split? Why you got laser swords?
Because that's your shield. And this is my shield.
Because I'm a veteran. I've been around since the 20s. What do you think? I don't know.
I got seniority on you, kiddo. You know?
That's right, son.
I just keep waiting for Steve to call him a whippersnapper at some point.
I know. Junior.
Junior. There
you go. When he just turns around and tells Sam, "Look, do like I did. Chill."
Oh.
Sorry. Okay. That joke was frozen in time. I get it.
Oh.
Let it go. Let it keep
coming. I guess you'll be here all weekend, right?
Unfortunately.
Tip your weight staff.
So, Eric, your final pick.
Yes. My final pick of the week, my final pick of the show, and my final pick of the month. I got to top the two of y'all, you know.
There you go. Yeah, you did.
Is get this. It's another number one. It's Daredevil Punisher number 1. A simple change of venues for one of Max Murdock's cases becomes more complicated when the Punisher attempts to send the defendant away permanently. If Daredevil and Blind blind spot want to get this mobster his day in court, it will take every ounce of wit and wile they have. All Frank needs to get what he wants is a bullet. The race is on.
I was going to say, this week, the picks were very tough because there were just so many to choose from.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of great books coming out this next week.
Yeah.
So that's our picks of the week. Before we close out, usually we say, what's our final thoughts? I actually want to give this to Sanford. I know you've got some projects coming up that are not related to Marvel. What do you have coming?
Well, I have this creator-owned thing that I've been working on off and on for the last 2.5 years, to be honest with you. It's called Rotten Apple, and it's published through Dark Horse. I did a four-part story in Dark Horse Presents a few years ago, and they collected that and made a one-shot, and it got some buzz, and they wanted to make a miniseries, and then Marvel said, hey, Power Man and Iron Fist, and I was like, okay, and that was the end of that, but I do want to go back to that here sooner than later. I'm actually working on a few things right now on that, but probably won't see anything materialized until like towards the end of the year, but that's what I'm working on now. I'm also doing some other stuff that could possibly drop next year summer. That's what I'm thinking right now. So there's a few things I'm doing, some animated stuff and some I'm working on some stuff, some animated stuff as well. I'm a huge fan of animation, so I got interested in that and I started working on that. And
what's been the favorite animation or anime that you've gotten into, or is it just animation in general?
Just animation in general, but I don't know. I mean, I guess anime has always been, not always, but within the last 20 years, I've been, you know, a huge fan of anime and animation in general.
But, any particular one that's the guilty pleasure?
Guilty pleasure.
Or the one that if it's available, you will stop everything to watch.
Oh, well, that's an easy one right there. This thing called One Punch Man that just recently came out. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, it's the most insane. It's so insane. It has no story whatsoever. You think it has a story, and then it does something to totally, you know, discredit that. And I think that's just genius, to be honest with you. It draws you in, and you think you figured everything out, and then something just throws you back off course, and it makes you want to tune in to the next episode. As a matter of fact, I saw someone do some fan art of that character about the Hulk.
Oh, wow.
And only it's so awesome if you know the series. If you know the series, that piece drives home an incredible point of just how powerful this guy is for no reason. And so that's the one that I'm really excited about right now. All-time favorite, you know, probably, you know, it kind of goes without saying, the Battle of the Planets and there's so many from back then that really,
yeah,
you know, there were a lot more then that I watched than I do now, but the things of that nature. Okay. You know,
awesome. Well, we thank you for coming on.
Yeah, man. Sorry, that wasn't exciting. Like
No.
That was like. I like cartoons. Okay.
No.
Take care.
There ain't nothing wrong with that now.
No, I'm a sucker for cartoons day and night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I tend to put cartoons or animation in a separate category than anime.
Right.
Animation versus cartoons. Now, there are some that cross over, like Thundercats and Transformers. And, oh, man, I was all over that stuff, man.
Right.
Tell me about it. My dad would tell me during the warmer months, like, yo, when you get home from school, I want you and get your homework done. I want you to start cutting grass.
Oh.
Of course, Transformers and G.I. Joe and Thundercats all came on right next to each other.
Yeah.
So I would like just like, okay, yo, boom, boom, boom. Okay, I'm done with homework. I'll get to the grass before Dad gets home. I know when he gets home. we Thundercatting right now.
Thundercats takes a priority.
It was Thundercats and Silverhawks.
Yeah.
So, anybody remember Saber Rider and the Star Sheriffs?
Yes.
I do, but never really watched it a lot.
Actually, somebody just picked it up, and they're doing a comic series of it. I loved that cartoon, and that was one of those that kind of, it crossed over in the anime realm.
Yeah.
And so, like, now I've just been, like, itching to, I don't know, maybe sit down and look, see if maybe it's on, if it's streaming on YouTube somewhere, and just binge for, like, I don't know, an afternoon.
That sounds a lot like the Galaxy Rangers.
Yeah, it was weird. Right about the same time you had Bravestar, Galaxy Rangers, and Saber Rider and Star Sheriffs. This is a whole space western thing going on. It was awesome. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, well, that's going to wrap it up for us this week. I know you can catch Sanford on Facebook and on Twitter. Check him out.
I wasn't sure. You can find me on there.
I found you on Twitter.
I found you on Facebook.
I found you on Facebook too.
I found you on Facebook too.
It's unanimous. We can find you on Facebook too.
I got to change that, man. I can't. That's a little too much finding. I'm just kidding, man.
If you find him too much, he's going to send Luke Cage on you. with show enough.
He's going
to. Oh, that's a bad day.
That's a bad day.
Luke Cage and show enough?
Yep.
You guys
said something earlier that gave me an idea. I can't remember what it was. Let's see. Let's backtrack here.
Tiara in the drawer?
The Last Dragon?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Bruce Leroy?
Yeah. Well, that.
El DeBarge?
or was it about Danny's? Well, how his costume, his uniform, I call it uniform, I don't know what it's called, how it looks a lot like what Bruce wore in Game of Death.
I'll figure it out. We'll talk afterwards.
Hey, Kylan, it might have been this.
Earth's Mightiest Heroes! Earth's Mightiest Heroes! Earth's Mightiest Heroes! Cause Ultron Funk gon' give it to you! Cause Ultron Funk gon' give it to you! Cause Ultron Funk gon' give it to you! Avengers assemble and fight us out! It's the Age of Ultron!
That's the other clip.
If my head starts bopping at work tomorrow, it's all your fault.
Yeah, that's some rough stuff right there, man. That's some rough stuff, man.
Well, but before we get too far, Jarvis, if you would please.
All wrapped up here, sir. Will there be anything else?
Nope, just time to go dark. So, Sanford, as we're winding down, any potential spoilers you could give us for what might be coming up for Power Man and Iron Fist?
There's going to be an issue 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And I think there's going to be a 10, 11. So that's all they got. Maybe a 12 is going to be in there too. I'm pretty sure.
So we can't say if Shang-Chi decided he wants to see what's going on in Harlem at some point.
Somewhere in issues 5, 6, 7, 9, or 10, 11, 12.
Okay.
He should possibly show up somewhere there. Somewhere.
Oh, my.
Issue 10, co-starring special guest Bruce Leroy.
Bruce Leroy.
Oh, man, if Bruce Leroy showed up.
Bruce Leroy with Shang-Chi.